Programs. This is the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Trucks packed with explosives blew up at a London-based bank and the British consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, Thursday, killing at least 25 people and wounding nearly 400. The attacks coincided with George W. Bush's trip to Britain and were blamed on Al-Qaeda. Security forces were put on the highest alert to deal with some of the worst bloodshed in Turkey since the 1970s. The bombings at the high-rise headquarters of the HSBC Bank and the British consulate occurred 5 minutes apart at about 11 o'clock local time. They followed a pair of synagogue bombings Saturday that killed 25 people. A bomb apparently hidden in a pickup truck exploded Thursday at the offices of a U.S.-allied Kurdish political party in the northern Iraq city of Kirkuk, killing 5 people and wounding 40, including children. It was the second car bombing in as many days targeting Iraqis who cooperate with the U.S.-led occupation. Mayor Abdul Rahman Mustafa said all indications point to a suicide attack because one unidentified body could be the driver. Elsewhere, a pro-U.S. politician was assassinated in the southern city of Basra, and gunmen killed an Iraqi guard at the Jordanian embassy in Baghdad. The U.S. military reported forces killed 10 Iraqis north of the capital after being attacked. House Senate bargainers shrugged off a White House veto threat Wednesday and agreed to block a Bush administration plan to let any company own television stations watched by nearly half the nation's viewers. Without a specific vote on the subject and virtually no discussion, negotiators included a provision barring the FCC from letting companies own stations watched by 45% of viewers. That means the current limit of 35% would remain in effect. Senate Appropriations Committee Chairman Ted Stevens, a supporter of retaining the current narrower ownership limits, told reporters he expected a verbal spanking from the White House, but not a veto. More news after this.
Make a fast friend. Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
A concessions worker filled used plastic cups with beer and resold them at Sunday's Tampa Bay Buccaneers game and pocketed over $1,000 in unreported sales. The worker was observed picking up used cups from tables and refilling them without rinsing them at a Bud Light booth near the south end zone of Raymond James Stadium. The food service company alerted police after noticing that more beer was being sold from the worker's booth than was being reported. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway.
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
Pundits and other political cynics scoff at citizens' efforts to reform America's money-corrupted political process, saying it's as futile as trying to teach table manners to a hog. The effort wears you out, and it only annoys the hog. That's cute, but if the cynics would only lift their eyes from their myopic focus on Washington, they would see something big taking place in such diverse states as Maine and Arizona. Citizens in both places have already passed grassroots initiatives providing for dramatic reform, public financing of elections. These clean election initiatives give candidates of any party the chance to finance both their primary and general election campaigns with public funds, provided they forego taking special interest money. Not only does this help get corrupt money out of the process, But it also means a regular person can run for office again. Since a school teacher, taxi driver, farmer, shopkeeper, steel worker, or anyone else has access to a pool of money to make them financially competitive with the incumbents. Maine and Arizona have run two election cycles under clean money laws, and the results would warm the cockles of the coldest cynic's heart. There have been more challengers to incumbents than before, with more women, Latinos, and Native Americans running and winning. Half of the challengers using the clean money option say they would not have run without it. Because this system creates more choices, offering fresh faces and new ideas, voter turnout is ratcheting upward. And here's the big one, public financing is working. 59% of Maine's legislators and 36% of those in Arizona have now been elected without taking any tainted money. And publicly funded candidates in Arizona last year won 7 of 9 statewide offices, including the governor and attorney general. This is Jim Hightower saying, if you want clean elections, call Public Campaign, 202-293-0222.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
yeah.
Stop.
A few more years.
No. I'm talking about now.
Like a tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. You're listening to the nation's largest nationally syndicated daytime progressive talk show. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast, also streaming live across the internet on ieamericaradio.com, live365.com, and radiopower.org, and streaming down from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, stream 145. Welcome to our program today. A lot to talk about. I want to start right out with my friend Chuck Morse, who is running against Barney Frank. Chuck is a Republican in Boston. Well, Chuck, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, nice to have you back on. And I'd say you're more than a Republican. You are a hardcore, hardline conservative, right?
I would say that I'm a moderately conservative.
Moderately conservative. Okay.
I hate to think of myself as hardcore or anything, but.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I didn't mean that in a negative way.
I guess the question is, what do you mean? What you talking hardcore, right?
Well, yeah. Let's talk about a few of these issues. Lindsey Graham, for example, just came out with this little whopper here.
I'm doing it when it's the hardest to do.
And the doing it is
time when
is let's kill Social Security, basically.
Reasons not to talk about it, and I want to talk about it. Because if you wait to when people are ready to talk about it, that day never comes.
Yeah, so this is his little speech about, let's do something about Social Security. And then we've got, of course, the Medicare reform, which many on my side of the perspective see as the death knell of Medicaid. And actually, I think many conservatives are thinking that this is the wedge that can be opened to eliminate the last vestiges of the Great Society, Medicare, and the New Deal, Social Security. What are your thoughts on these two issues, Chuck?
Well, actually, quite the opposite, Tom. I think that the conservative approach is going to be what's going to save the New Deal programs, not destroy them. If we let them continue as they are with the rising cost and the rising level of bureaucracy and the cost to American working men and women, then it's going to implode and it'll destroy itself. I think we need to save the New Deal programs by bringing them into the 21st century and streamlining them, making them, giving people a more democratic approach to them in terms of options, whether they want to opt out or whether they want to perhaps do something like with regard to Social Security, maybe actually keep a small portion of their donation into the program so it can earn interest so that maybe they could have something when they retire that could, they could pass on to their heirs. What a way to reduce poverty. But anyway, no, well, I think that the approach is to actually save it rather than just pretend that it's going to continue on. After 80 years, the New Deal programs have reached a point where they've become overstuffed, oversized, and corrupt. And in order to bring them into a reasonable...
Chuck, let me interrupt you here. We're starting to stack things on top of each other, and I'd like to take them one at a time, if you don't mind. Social Security is operating... First of all, the premise of Social Security, in which it was put forth, where even the Rockefeller heirs had to pay into it and could receive money from it, was that the way that a true insurance program works, and it was perceived as an insurance program in the best concept of E.F. Stone, the way a true insurance program works is you insure everybody, and out of that pool, then you can cover everybody. And as soon as you start breaking it down and saying, okay, well, we're going to let some folks opt out of this and some folks stay, then it'll fall apart. Social Security has been this universal insurance program, and it operates at a 1% overhead. 1% overhead. Now, how can a private corporation, number one, operate at less than 1% when it's got to pay, say, 2 or 3 or 4 or 5% in dividends to its stockholders?
The insurance aspect of Social Security, I support a small portion, at least, of the Social Security going into some sort of an annuity program that will insure a worker if they have to leave work, for whatever reason.
But my
point is that the majority of it now, it goes right into the U.S. Treasury Department. It's a tax. And if you took that equivalent and you put it into nothing more than a passbook savings account, let alone the question, but let's put aside the question of stock investment, the worker would accumulate enough compound interest so that when they retired, they would actually have a substantial nest egg. Right now, they have nothing. Right now, they get whatever the government sends them, which they deserve, and I support every single person who's paid into this system should get their money back. But when they die, oftentimes the money disappears. The system is not set up in a way that the deck is not stacked in an interest of the private worker who is trying to accumulate some capital.
But Chuck, it sounds to me like what you're suggesting is that the money that's going into Social Security, which is now I don't believe drawing interest.
No, it's not. It's going right into the U.S. Treasury. There is no Social
Right, and then it pays back out. The innovation that Stone brought to the insurance industry was that he collected premiums from people, then he invested the money, and he made a profit on the investments, and he actually was trying to do his actuaries originally, his tables, so that his payout and his input were identical, so that people, 1,000 people pay in, $1 million, and 1,000 people get back $1 million, and he makes a profit on being able to float on the float on the cash.
Right.
And so, if you wanted to pursue that for Social Security, what's wrong with the government simply buying Treasury bills?
Well, because
why do we have to get corporations involved in this?
Because it creates future debt. It's a mortgage on our future, and it's going to have to be paid back.
No, buying Treasury bills doesn't create debt. Issuing Treasury bills creates debt.
Well, that's what I mean. The Treasury bills are issued to the U.S. government, which then monetizes debt.
Right, but they're already there. I mean, why? Right now, we're begging China. China owns something like 20% of our debt this year of the T-bills that we're treasuries that we're selling,
right.
And we're begging them to buy more, and we're panicked that the rest of the world is
borrowing on our future. The whole system could be done with a positive cash flow, and I'm not against the Stone theory. Again, I just say that it could be done at a fraction of the contribution by the worker. The rest of it should be accumulated as capital, as privately controlled capital that can accumulate in interest and that can give a person property upon retirement. So it's you see, what you're talking about is a debt system, and I think we could switch to.
No, I'm talking about investing.
System.
I'm just saying invest it in something other than private corporations. Why not invest it in the United States government?
because I think that we should invest in private corporations. So that it, because private corporations actually create something. They create jobs. They create production. They create whatever it is they're doing. There's the government. You can't invest in the government. The government doesn't create anything. The government only takes that. And I'm not saying I'm an anarchist by any means, but the government takes that which people create, and then they distribute it. So sure, we should invest in
corporations. Okay, so what you brought us back to
business, yes.
What you brought us back to is the original argument that FDR put forth about that there should be just simply cash in and cash out. That if you're putting it into government treasuries, then you're encouraging debt, or you know, you would say. And the goal, of course, was that there would be no debt, and so there would be no treasuries to fund Social Security, so it shouldn't be that way. And the concern was that if you put it into the stock market, you know, you're gambling. You're putting it into the...
Two things there, Tom. First of all, the cash in, cash out equation, why not have the cash in, which is, after all, the working man and woman's capital, the sweat of their brow, why not have that be a positive investment rather than just a flat in and out? And as far as, what was your second question?
Well, I think the larger issue here, Chuck, is that my suggestion, or my position, is that the government is us, that we are the government. This is our money. This is our investment for the future, that what we collectively decided to put together, and that needs to be just this separate thing, and that if we decide to take our money and then go out into the private marketplace and start messing around, it's just a very dangerous thing.
I now know what you're talking about with the second part. My wife is a federal employee, and so certainly I'm not anti-government. And in her job, she is given a retirement option where she can choose from four or five mutual funds, some more risky, some less risky, depending upon her level of comfort, and that those mutual funds are managed by the government. They have private funds. They are invested in corporations, but yet the government maintains a certain level of oversight. Now, I think that happens to be an excellent program, and it shows where government can be innovative without actually getting in the business itself.
But that's not what Lindsey Graham is suggesting.
Excuse me?
That's not what Graham is suggesting. What Graham is suggesting, what these folks are suggesting, is instead that the government basically bring in the Wall Street brokers and banks, the ones who we
right.
discover now are ripping off people in mutual funds, and let them have Social Security's money.
Well, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with if that's what he's saying. I think that both things can happen. You can bring in the Wall Street experts, and you can bring in the corporations. But the respective states, probably, but maybe the federal, but I would probably be more state-oriented, should have oversight over a set number of funds that the worker can invest in, and that will come under regular review by a government agency. Nevertheless, the money is still private.
So you do trust the government?
It's still there, just like my wife's fund.
So you, okay. Well, you're not as radical as I thought. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. Armand is on the line in Florida. He's got a question for you, Chuck.
Sure.
Armand, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, thank you very much. You know, I think, Tom, I'm tired of hearing this conversation about these privatizing folks. First off, you have to look at this group, basically. They lied about NAFTA. They lied about GATT. Remember the Newt Gingrich telecommunications bill, how cheap cable was going to be? Now it's minimum $50. It's went up dramatically. And the savings and loans, remember when they all crashed? They didn't privatize that, did they? They went to the taxpayers, and they bailed out their rich friends with the taxpayers' money, with the people's money.
Yeah, especially
Halliburton's
Neil Bush.
Halliburton's army over there in Iraq right now, that's the people's money financed, and I don't see Dick Cheney putting his money up solely. These people are pathetic. Somebody's got to tell them enough is enough. And say, keep your damn hands out of our money and our future. Why don't you guys
okay.
go get a life?
Okay, got it, Armand. Thanks. I appreciate the comment. I don't think that there was a question in there, Chuck.
Diatribe.
Well, I think that there is. I think Armand represents and reflects a real and legitimate concern.
And what is that?
That there are the part of the conservative agenda is to hand over the reins of what is we the people, the commons, the stuff that we own in common, which now we have decided since the New Deal includes our retirement, to hand that over to private corporations who have not demonstrated their ability to be competent or to be truthful. And we'll get back into this. We've got Linda in Louisiana on the line with a question for you also. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Uncommon Sense in the Radical Middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway!
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. But don't take my word for it. Call us to get a free sampler. Yes, you heard me right, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817. The Washington Monthly.
I want everyone to listen up and understand clearly. We need some good weekday programming ideas. I don't know why no one is writing this down.
Oh, geez. Oops.
We need some good weekday programming ideas that will appeal to all angles and opinions of all listeners. Any ideas? Johnson.
Oh, you said the wrong name.
It's Jameson, sir.
Jackson, Johnson, Jasper, whatever.
Maybe we can pick up Limbaugh and convince him to move more to the middle.
That's good. Get out of my office. Yeah, get out. Jeez. You're an idiot.
Sure.
Spicoli.
It's Smith, sir.
Yeah. Give me something good.
Why don't we just have some shows that will appeal to everyone's opinion? It'll make the listener base more diverse and make for a good show.
A talk show that everyone will listen to because their opinions will be supported by other listeners and welcomed by the show host. That's brilliant. Good job, Swanson.
You're on the ball.
Everyone take this next holiday off.
Wait, someone has to work. Doug Steffen's live.
Oh, nice.
Come on.
The best in progressive talk radio, weekdays, on the only progressive talk radio network there is, i.e. America Radio Network.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda, I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the i.e. America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
And And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking to Chuck Morse. He's a columnist and the host of a radio talk show on WROL in Boston, AM 950, and is currently, in fact, are you still doing your radio show while you're running against Barney Frank there?
Actually, Tom, once my candidacy was declared and the Boston Globe did a very nice article about it, I had to take a leave of absence.
Yeah, I figured that. That has happened to a friend of mine, Nancy Skinner, as well, Chicago. Chuck Morse running against Barney Frank for Congress. And, we've talked about the Social Security. I see the same thing in Medicare. It's just so clear to me that the conservative agenda is one of let's bring the corporations in, let's bring them into campaign finance, let's let them corrupt government, let's take their money, let's hand over the trillions of dollars that flows through government to the. I mean, look at this energy bill. There's money for a Hooters restaurant in the energy bill. I mean, this is nuts, Chuck.
Where are they opening it?
It's in I'll have to dig it out, but I think it's in Colorado.
Okay, that's funny.
Yeah, bad
look
joke.
At it. I mean, I think that the fact of the matter is that there's a good balance between, generally speaking, Republicans and conservatives have viewed government as an instrument that can use money to contribute to programs, but yet that the programs themselves are best handled by people. Government has a role in terms of oversight.
Hey, wait a minute, Chuck.
But when the government
itself is people.
Starts running the show, it just doesn't work. And I think that's proven.
How can you say that? I mean, Social Security is solvent. If nothing is done, if absolutely nothing is done, I had this conversation over dinner with my congressman, Bernie Sanders, 3 weeks ago. If absolutely nothing is done with Social Security, he had the numbers to prove it. The fund is totally solvent for at least 30 to 35 years, and with a small adjustment, like a 1% change in the tax rate, the Social Security tax rate, it will be solvent forever. It's running 1% of expenses, and it's been working for 80 years. I mean, why mess with it? But you've already laid out why. I mean, I'm
right.
Asking this rhetorically. Let's get to some of these questions. We got Linda in Louisiana on the line. Linda, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. With all due respect to your guest, Tom, I don't want my money in a private account. I want the government to take care of it. Look at Enron, look at WorldCom, look at the other examples your prior caller made.
Linda, you don't want Ken Lay handling your retirement funds?
No, Tom, I don't trust him. And gee whiz, I wonder why.
I'm right there with you.
And we just want you Republicans to keep stealing, to quit stealing everything from the middle class and the poor, because that's what you're doing.
Yeah,
and see it.
It is becoming so conspicuous, isn't it, Linda, that the conservative agenda is a new aristocracy in America of the corporate and wealth aristocracy and destroying labor and, you know. And, well, Linda, is there a question in there for Chuck, or is that
No, Tom, I tried to think of one, but I couldn't.
Yeah,
I just wanted to make my comment.
Well, all righty. Thank you, Linda. I appreciate your calling. Chuck,
thank you.
How can you respond to this? I mean, it is becoming so obvious that the con agenda is one of basically ripping off the American middle class.
Well, Tom, as I said, I think that the solution is government oversight over certain set funds, mutual funds, so that the worker can put money in a private account and get some.
But, Chuck, right now
benefit.
The SEC is so incompetent under the Bush administration. I mean,
yeah.
Bush has asked the SEC not to investigate him for his insider deal with Harkin Energy. And in the process, you know, he's got his puppet, his stooges in the SEC. They're so incompetent that the Attorney General of New York State is doing what the federal government should be doing, exposing corruption within these pension funds.
By the way, I completely agree that the FCC has fallen down on the job. It's not with Bush. It goes all the way back, actually, to the first Bush administration. But, you know, I actually agree with my opponent, Barney Frank, on this one issue.
On
that
the SEC.
Is that the states need to also be involved in oversight regarding securities and exchange. That
yeah.
type of investment
okay.
is too complicated to just leave up to the open market.
Good point, Chuck. Hang on. We got to take a break here. We'll pick this up on the other side. We got a couple of more callers. This is Tom Hartman on IE. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Widespread use of antibiotics in agriculture might be creating diseases that are harder to treat. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Many farm animals are on drugs, and that might pose a major health risk to people. Mark Jerome Walters is a veterinarian and the author of a new book called Six Modern Plagues. He says big agriculture has gotten hooked on antibiotics.
The vast majority of antibiotics in this country, that is pound for pound, are used not to treat sick people. They aren't used to even treat sick animals. They are put in the feed of animals that are essentially, or at least on the surface, healthy in order to prevent epidemics in these unsanitary large livestock operations. They also help the animals grow a little bit faster.
That makes livestock operations more profitable, but Walter says it makes antibiotics less effective. Disease-causing bacteria develop resistance to the drugs over time. Those tougher bacteria reproduce and contaminate meat sent to market, putting people at risk. Walter says salmonella is an example. He says there's a tough new strain that can resist 5 major antibiotics, making it very difficult to treat when people become infected.
Every time a new round of human antibiotics are introduced and then subsequently used in animals, that a few months or a couple of years later, you find new types of bacteria, salmonella food poisoning, cropping up.
Walter says we need to rethink this preventative use of antibiotics in livestock operations. He says it raises profits for farmers at the expense of public health, and he urges consumers to shop for meat from farms that don't use these drugs. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Like the pine trees lining the winding road, I've got a name. I've got a name. Like the singing bird and the croaking toad, I've got a name. I've got a name.
Hey, welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You're in the Democracy Zone. We're talking today with Chuck Morse, a candidate for the United States Congress against Barney Frank in the, what district would that be there, Chuck?
That would be the 4th Congressional District of Massachusetts.
There you go. Yep. Thank you. In today's Wall Street Journal, and Chuck, Chuck and I met both doing talk radio, radio talk shows. I've been on his show, he's been on my show, and in the past. And I remember when I was on your show, I had this feeling, you know, your callers were calling up and going, "Ah, this liberal creep, get him off the air." And And I had this vision of being, you know, in the carnivals that travel around, you know, where you sit on the thing and people throw a ball and try and hit the thing and it drops you into the tank of water.
Right.
And I have a feeling you probably feel that way being on my show, and I want to thank you for being on.
My pleasure. No, it's always good to have a diversity of opinion.
I agree, and always good to respectfully disagree. Here in today's Wall Street Journal, this is a column by David Wessel. There's no denying the math. Taxes will rise. With President Bush's blessing, Congress is rushing to pass legislation that means taxes will go up significantly. This isn't a statement of personal political preference, Wessel says. This is a statement of arithmetic. A Republican president with a Republican Congress. And he says, and there's no way. He says, economic growth, raising stock market, all that, more tax money. But he says, we are not going to be able to grow our way out of this deficit hole, period. And then he goes on to say, eventually the public financial markets, recent history suggests that eventually the public financial markets, the Federal Reserve and politicians will react to deficits. That's when taxes will go up. And then he points out, and I did a show on this last week about this game that back in the 80s, suddenly the Republicans wised up. That back in the Barry Goldwater days, when Republicans were talking about balanced budgets and rational spending and all this kind of stuff, and then in the late 70s, there's a Republican strategist whose name escapes me at the moment, who had suggested what he called the two Santa Clauses theory. And he said the Republicans need to embrace this, which is, number one, you say, you know, we're going to give you this and this and this and this, and number two, we're going to give you tax cuts. We're going to be both Santa Clauses. And then the Democrats are going to have to come in and clean up but the Republicans would have to be absolutely amoral enough to push it all the way to the edge. In other words, to actually push through these kinds of legislation that could destroy America if they didn't know that the Democrats would come in and clean it up. And here in today's Wall Street Journal, he says, Lawrence Meyer, a former U.S. Federal Reserve governor, and a Democrat, quips that Republicans create deficits and then turn the White House over to Democrats to raise taxes, then retake the White House and start all over again. Quote, this process does involve an equilibrium mechanism, he says, but it's more fun to be a Republican, end quote. We got a couple of callers here too, and I want to get to them. But what would you do to change the Republican Party and get them off this shtick here?
First of all, Tom, I'm delighted to see that you've become a fiscal conservative.
I've always been a fiscal conservative.
Are you okay?
And I think most liberals are. This is the thing that amazes me is that people think that quote being a liberal, whatever that means in general, means that you want to spend the country into debt or something like that.
Well, look, Tom, all I know is that when I got in this race and I start to examine the record of my opponent, I see that he's voted for spending programs going back 25 years, and he's one of the biggest spenders in Congress, and he's a liberal. So,
yeah, but he's also voting in favor of taxation. I mean, I have no problem with paying taxes if I'm getting something for it.
Right.
Just like I have no problem with buying a product, at a store if I get something for it.
Sure. Well, look, the point that I want to make is that the Republicans could do a better job of not increasing spending. Both parties are increasing spending. The Democrats are increasing it faster than the Republicans. So
the Democrats have no control right now.
Well, when they do.
I mean, the Republicans didn't even let them sit in on the deliberations
right,
on this energy.
The point is that if you look at the past 50 years, I mean, Congress has primarily been Democrat until the 1990s. But the issue is that both parties are becoming big spending parties. I mean, I guess it's a matter of which is worse. I see it as a train that's either going fast or faster. And I will be a fiscal conservative in the genuine sense, whether Democrats or Republicans like it or not. I want to see government cut. I believe it can be cut without affecting basic services. And I think that you have a good, solid core of conservative Republicans who, and probably some conservative Democrats too, who feel that way in Congress. And if I get there, I'm going to form a caucus with them, and we should review every agency of government to see where it can be reduced, and where it can be streamlined, and where it can be consolidated, because I think you're
just dreaming, Chuck. Because all that stuff is absolutely transparent. I mean, corporations are not transparent. They can say, "No, you can't look at our books," but the government is absolutely transparent. And I guarantee you, if there were areas of conspicuous waste where we could really save money, there would be Republicans or Democrats, whatever. I mean, there would be people demagoguing that issue. They'd be out there, like Proxmire's
Golden
Fleece
Awards. Yeah, but
Awards.
They don't seem to have the will to do it. Neither party does. I mean, the Republicans are a little bit better. But somebody has to say, look,
Congress
you know, it
has
could,
the power
no, no,
to
hang on just a second, Chuck. It could be that outside of the Pentagon, and I know everybody's afraid to go after the Pentagon, which has, you know, $1 trillion has vanished into a hole and they refuse to account for. But outside of the Pentagon, it could be that there really isn't that much waste anymore, that the government's actually gotten pretty good
that.
At this.
And I mean, you and I don't know that, Tom, because we're not in government, but I hope to get there and give a businessman's eye to it and say, let's see if we can do this better and cheaper and at the same time still provide the service. I mean,
okay,
I know here in Massachusetts our governor is doing it, and there's an enormous amount of waste that he's found. And I cannot believe that on the federal level you wouldn't find the same thing. I just think that government could be streamlined and still do all the things we want it to do. And the Republicans do bear some of the guilt for this, not as much, but there is still a good, solid core of Republicans who understand that Congress has the power to tax, Congress makes all the appropriations, and it's their moral and practical responsibility to make sure that the people's money is spent carefully and wisely.
Your key there, Chuck, is the government still doing the things that we want it to do,
right.
And that's where I suspect that you're gonna end up coming up short. But let's, Roy, I've got five calls here in only about 10 minutes, so let's get through these really quickly. Roy in New Mexico is on the line. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program, Roy. We're talking with Chuck Morse.
Yes. And I have one real quick comment. The deal about Hooters, I'd love to see that, because it stands to reason they were allowed in the Vets Parade and the Vets for Peace were kept out down in Florida. That wasn't the point of the call, though. I have several questions, so many questions, I can't even think of them all.
Let's take one, because we got four other callers here.
If the Social Security contributions go into, quote, mutual funds with government oversight, is that not lead to fascism? Period. By definition, because if the government has the oversight of the mutual funds, do they tell the mutual fund, buy General Motors because they're selling gas-guzzling pickups, or do they say buy Ford because they're creating environmental cars?
No,
do
what they do
this?
Is they
do
simply
they
make sure that...
No,
that's not what they do, and that would be illegal. And I'd support anyone doing that to be prosecuted.
If they have the oversight.
No, the oversight simply means that where the money is, and this is how it works in the federal government now, for my wife's pension, for example. It just takes a look at the quality of the investments, make sure that they're sound, make sure that that nobody's trying to slip in another, you know, Enron for that matter. You know, it goes out, it actually looks at the corporations, it looks at the books, and it makes sure that the investment
I think,
is
Chuck, the point that Roy is making, Roy, I appreciate you calling that, and Chuck, I think the point that Roy is making is that the dictionary definition of fascism is the merging of business and state interests. That was Mussolini's idea.
Well, I don't think this is a merger of business and state interests. This is simply government operating in its best capacity, which is using some common sense oversight. That's
okay,
what
here's the thing,
that's
by the way, for the energy bill.
By the way,
Chuck, I'm sorry, I got to interrupt you.
And I agree.
We can't filibuster each other here. Let me just real quickly. The energy bill includes a $350 million program to finance local development projects with tax-exempt bonds, including a Bass Pro Store and a Hooters restaurant in Shreveport, Louisiana. The bill also includes financing for a mall in Syracuse, New York, that's slated to cost three times the cost of the mall in America. The bill also includes the elimination of $48 million in tariffs on imported ceiling fans, which benefits Home Depot. So, you know,
like a couple of congressmen are getting some favors for their friends. There's nothing new with
bet.
That. I mean,
you bet.
That crosses party lines, by the way.
Yeah, I know. No, I'm. Yeah, Ken in Chicago's on the line. 1-800-TALK. Yes. Hey, Ken. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program with Chuck Morse.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, Ken.
Chuck, you Republicans seem to have this simplistic idea that business will solve every problem ever thrown at mankind. Where is the IRS bureaucrat who has stolen money from the Treasury as opposed to the businessmen and the CEO who have looted their corporations?
Well, first
That's
of all,
a great
I don't
question,
think that business
Chris.
Solves anything. I mean, I'm
well,
a non-utopian.
Well, you're saying that, you know, we're going to invest, we're going to run everything in a business-like manner. I can give you a very simple example. You will never, ever be able to run or offer health care in a business-like manner, because if someone is sick, nobody is going to settle for the Volkswagen or the Yugo when they're sick. Everybody wants the Rolls-Royce because they only have one life.
Right.
So it's not realistic.
Well, look, I mean, first of all, I'm non-utopian. I know that business and freedom is imperfect, and life is imperfect, unlike the big government, which says we're going to make everything right.
There are inequities and there are inequalities. That's part of human existence. It's
government cannot make everything right, but businesses are in business to make money. I don't want businesses providing my social services because they're
that's absolutely right, Ken. The whole purpose of creating a corporation is to make money. It's not to provide services.
And what's wrong with that? I mean, that's fine if you're making widgets,
but if you're talking about providing for.
Ken, thanks for the call, by the way. In order to earn the money, they have to provide a better service. And the service, the social services
but
that
not
do
with
that
my,
are the ones that
not
get
with
the
my
money,
tax dollars.
And they deserve it.
Yeah, not with my tax dollars. By the way, Steph, I've got an echo in my head in my headphones.
Sorry
here.
Sorry about that.
1-800-TALK, yes, our number. Ed in Dayton, Ohio is on the line. Ed, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello. I just wanted to point out to Chuck that, you know, he just made, and you started to correct him on this, but I'm sorry, there's an intercom here in the background. What happened with the statement about the people should provide these things and do these things, not the government. The government is the people. It's all of the people. Corporations are small groups of people who have very specific special interests. And in the 80s and 90s, the Republican Party was able to pervert the meaning of the word special interest. But really, special interests are interests that are specific to only a few people. And the government is supposed to represent all of us. And when it does, that is when it hasn't been bought off by large corporations, it can do it much, it can provide the things we need much more efficiently than somebody who has to make a profit. And
there
I don't
you
think
go,
they give
you
an example.
I absolutely agree. And
yeah,
thank,
I'd like to
thank
see
you
an
for the
example
call.
Of that. I don't think they do it.
Chuck, the example of that is Social Security operating at a 1% expense, whereas health insurance in the United States typically costs 25 to 30% overhead.
That's a ripoff of working men and women.
No,
because if working men and women were able to take even a passbook interest rate on that money, they could have a nest egg on retirement.
And a whole bunch of people in Wall Street would be multimillionaires handing out more money to Republicans in Congress.
That's right. Well, I don't think
we've got five more calls here. Tim in Santa Fe, 1-800-TALK. Yes, Tim in Santa Fe, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Chuck. I'm not going to even talk about 401ks, but how about, and what they did in the past, but how about the war profiteering and private corporations charging like $1,500 for a hammer? I mean, I think there's huge amounts of waste in government, and it's all in
the
military.
Well, the military,
it's all in the corporate.
Look at
corporate
the military, by the way, is not immune to as much waste as any other agency in government.
We spend $400 billion in the military.
That.
Let's cut that.
Well, I think we could take a look at certain military expenditures and streamline that as well. I'm not saying
that's amazing, Chuck. I don't think I've even heard Democrats say that they're willing to look at cutting back on the
I don't want to cut back on the military, but I want to stop the $1,000 toilet seats.
Yeah. Okay, Tim, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Keith in Santa Fe is on the line. Keith, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK. Yes, you're on the line with Chuck Morris and Tom Hartman.
Hi, how are you? I just wanted to point out to your guests, I mean, I during the in the 80s, I had a college friend who was a contract manager for a medium-sized defense company, and they would just, their interest was in making a profit for their company. And they would basically, their job was to rip off the federal government. Right. And that's what they did. And that's what all these guys do. And I think when you talk about privatization in general, you have to keep in mind that the interest, exactly what people have been saying, the interest of these corporations is to make money for a stockholder, not to provide a service. And, you know, when you get into privatizing large amounts of money like Social Security, you're just setting it up for a huge windfall. I mean, to these people who, you know, they have no morality in terms of
Keith, if I may interrupt, Keith, this is why right now the largest donor bloc to the Republican Party has shifted from being the energy industry that it was before 2000, because now they've gotten what they want in this energy bill, to being the financial industry. They're the ones who are dumping the most money into the Republican Party because they're looking at this honeypot of Social Security and going, whoa.
Can I just say one thing?
Actually, if I could just interject, the largest donors of the Republican Party are small grassroots people.
Which is why
campaign finance reform is basically boomeranged on the Democrats.
Well,
it seems to be doing fine for Howard Dean.
Social Security. Can I just say one thing, which is that I when I was young, I had a
some grandparents who left me a small trust account with a large U.S. With a large bank in New York, and basically
got to wrap it up quick, Keith.
They had a fiduciary responsibility to take care of that money, but basically all they did was milk it for their own profits, and that money did not grow at all; it shrank, it lost money. You know, I don't see where you get the idea that just because these guys are making money for themselves that they're going to make money for other people.
Yeah, it's an old story. Thanks for the call, Keith, and thanks for your comment. Chuck Morse, hang on the line. We've got Ann in Sarasota and Mark in Dallas. We'll have 3 or 4 minutes right after this break to wrap up the hour. Hopefully we can get them in and we can get this thing through. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway!
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have 2 chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
According to Abbas,
Immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody, what do we do with those folks? We arrest them, they are jailed, in some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say, wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
So they're coming to take me away.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman exposing the con and conservative. Our program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics and the Organic Wine Company. We have Ann in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Ann, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air with me and Chuck Morse.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
First off, have you been watching anything about the new prescription drug plan that they're pushing? That
I ranted about it for about an hour yesterday, yeah.
Right.
It's a mess.
I didn't catch your show yesterday, but are you aware that the seven lawmakers that were responsible for negotiating this plan has received in the past 3 years over $11 million from the healthcare industry and from drug companies?
I didn't know that number, but I'm not surprised.
I got that off of Boston newspaper off the Internet yesterday on BuzzFlash. And what I also found interesting in the whole thing is that when you read through the plan, basically people are still going to have to pay two-thirds of their own prescriptions. It's going to cap benefits. There's going to be means testing. It's going to raise the premiums for middle and upper income seniors. It's going to ban drug imports from Canada, which I don't see what that has to do with anything other than the drug companies don't want us getting prescription drugs cheaper. And so basically it's a bad plan.
Now, not only is it a bad plan, Ann, if I may interrupt you, but also you've got AARP supporting it, and it turns out that the president of AARP wrote the preface to Newt Gingrich's book.
I read that also.
it's mind-boggling. But
canceled my AARP membership, and I let them know why, because I don't want my money supporting that kind of crap.
Good one. But Ann, I want to bring this back to Chuck, if you don't mind. I haven't heard a question in here, and
okay,
I'd like
my question for him is. This is obvious. Everything you look at that the
we've only got about a minute left, Ann.
Benefits of corporations, not us people. So my question is to him is how can he say this with a straight face, what he's been saying, number one. And number two, he needs to start with his wife's job. If he wants to cut government, he needs to cut his wife's government job and work one of our
Ann.
Jobs and then
Ann, we're out of we're almost out of time. Chuck, are there any corporations that you will not take money from in this election?
Well, first of all, I haven't
got about 10
any
seconds.
Corporations
Sorry.
That have given me money, and if any corporation is doing something corrupt, I say they should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law because human nature is imperfect. But I love American corporations.
Okay,
and
great.
And I find the alternative to be quite chilling.
Okay, we'll let that be the final word. Thank you, Chuck Morse, for being on the Tom Hartman Program today. The No Spoon Feeding Zone.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday, 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name Carl.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Trucks packed with explosives blew up at a London-based bank and the British consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, Thursday, killing at least 25 people and wounding nearly 400. The attacks coincided with George W. Bush's trip to Britain and were blamed on Al-Qaeda. Security forces were put on the highest alert to deal with some of the worst bloodshed in Turkey since the 1970s. The bombings at the high-rise headquarters of the HSBC Bank and the British consulate occurred 5 minutes apart at about 11 o'clock local time. They followed a pair of synagogue bombings Saturday that killed 25 people. A bomb apparently hidden in a pickup truck exploded Thursday at the offices of a U.S.-allied Kurdish political party in the northern Iraq city of Kirkuk, killing 5 people and wounding 40, including children. It was the second car bombing in as many days targeting Iraqis who cooperate with the U.S.-led occupation. Mayor Abdul Rahman Mustafa said all indications point to a suicide attack because one unidentified body could be the driver. Elsewhere, a pro-U.S. politician was assassinated in the southern city of Basra, and gunmen killed an Iraqi guard at the Jordanian embassy in Baghdad. A former Iraqi general who claims to be part of the insurgency against U.S. troops says the guerrilla war around the city of Samarra is being waged by small groups fighting on their own without any direction from Saddam Hussein. He and two other Samarra men insisted in interviews with the AP that their fight isn't aimed at returning Saddam to power. They said it's about ending the occupation and restoring Iraqi rule. All three said their guerrilla groups are fighting without instructions from Saddam or any other contact with Iraq's former leader. They also said there's no shortage of potential fighters among Iraqi males, most of whom have had at least rudimentary military training from compulsory army service during Saddam's rule. More news after this.
Make a fast friend. Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
A vodka-drinking competition in a southern Russian town ended in tragedy, with the winner dead and several runners-up in intensive care. The competition lasted 40 minutes and the winner downed 3 half-liter bottles. He was taken home by taxi but died within 20 minutes. 5 other contestants ended up in intensive care. The director of the shop organizing the contest has been charged with manslaughter. He had offered 10 liters of vodka to the competitor drinking the most in the shortest time. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved.
I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Pundits and other political cynics scoff at citizens' efforts to reform America's money-corrupted political process, saying it's as futile as trying to teach table manners to a hog. The effort wears you out, and it only annoys the hog. That's cute, but if the cynics would only lift their eyes from their myopic focus on Washington, they would see something big taking place in such diverse states as Maine and Arizona. Citizens in both places have already passed grassroots initiatives providing for dramatic reform, public financing of elections. These clean election initiatives give candidates of any party the chance to finance both their primary and general election campaigns with public funds, provided they forego taking special interest money. Not only does this help get corrupt money out of the process, but it also means a regular person can run for office again, since a school teacher, taxi driver, farmer, shopkeeper, steelworker, or anyone else has access to a pool of money to make them financially competitive with the incumbents. Maine and Arizona have run two election cycles under clean money laws, and the results would warm the cockles of the coldest cynic's heart. There have been more challengers to incumbents than before, with more women, Latinos, and Native Americans running and winning. Half of the challengers using the clean money option say they would not have run without it. Because this system creates more choices, offering fresh faces and new ideas, voter turnout is ratcheting upward. And here's the big one, public financing is working. 59% of Maine's legislators and 36% of those in Arizona have now been elected without taking any tainted money. And publicly funded candidates in Arizona last year won 7 of 9 statewide offices, including the governor and attorney general. This is Jim Hightower saying, if you want clean elections, call Public Campaign, 202-293-0222.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows when you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. You're listening to the nation's largest nationally syndicated daytime progressive talk show, streaming live over the internet on ieamericaradio.com, live365.com. And radiopower.org, you can find it all at tomhartman.com. Streaming down from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, stream 145, and of course broadcasting on terrestrial radio stations from west coast to east. Wow, last hour we had Chuck Morse, he calls himself a moderate conservative, running against Bernie Frank. This hour, I am so pleased to have on this hour a man who I have tremendous respect for, Harvey Wasserman. Harvey is the senior editor of the Columbus Free Press, is author of Harvey Wasserman's History of the United States, and co-author with Bob Fitrus?
Patricus.
How do you say? Oh, thank you, Harvey. Of George W. Bush versus the Superpower of Peace. But I have to say, I know Harvey, I think, the best through your writings on commondreams.org, which we both contribute to. And I you've written some just great pieces there.
Well, thank you.
And Harvey, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
It's great to be on. It's an honor to be with you. I've followed your stuff for years.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You've got a great article in Mother Jones in the November-December 2003 issue, Partisan Power Loss, Concocted in Secret, Refined Behind Closed Doors, the GOP Energy Bill is a Policy Dead End.
And I'd like you to just share with us some of the stuff that you've uncovered in the course of researching this article about what these cons are and the conservatives, what the cons are up to in this thing. And you know, let's just start out. How have Republicans blocked moves towards cleaner energy over the past 50 years? I mean, going all the way back to killing Harry Truman's 1952 push for solar and wind energy, and then Eisenhower and Ray, well, I'll let you tell the story.
Well, it's a pretty sad story, actually. You know, part of this energy bill is to revive nuclear power, which is, you know, like raising, trying to refloat the Titanic here. And these guys, there's just no end to these guys. Nuclear power has been dead for years and years. There's not a single nuclear power plant in this country that's on order or under construction. We're stuck with 103 lousy, you know, potential Chernobyls here. And before we get too far, you know, the most important thing I want to say is that on September 11th, the first jet that flew into the World Trade Center a minute earlier flew directly over the Indian Point nuclear plant, and had it dived down a minute earlier, you wouldn't be talking about 2,700 people dead. You'd be talking about hundreds of thousands and trillions of dollars worth of damage. So put that in one's brain there. But the way this happened, the way this evolved, is that in 1952, Harry Truman had the wisdom to look into the future of energy in this country, and he commissioned a very high-level report chaired by the chairman of CBS at the time, William Paley. And they came back with a blue ribbon finding that the future of America's energy was with solar power. This was 51 years ago. And,
yeah,
you know, they predicted that there'd be 15 million solar-heated homes in the United States by 1975, and that, you know, we would be able to get off oil, off coal, and all that stuff, and have energy self-sufficiency with renewables. And this was
and then the Republicans took over, right?
Yeah, right. Well, then what, Dwight Eisenhower beat Adlai Stevenson. Of course, today Dwight Eisenhower would be a moderate Democrat. But nonetheless, and he, in 1953... got in front of the United Nations at the behest of the Atomic Energy Commission, which wanted kind of a happy face on the nuclear bombs it was building, and announced to the world that the future of energy was not with solar power, I didn't mention solar power, but was with the so-called peaceful atom, which is the ultimate contradiction in terms.
Yeah.
And he,
atoms for peace.
Atoms for peace, and he announced that the United States was going to share its commercial reactor technology, which was non-existent at the time, and the world would go to too cheap to meter nuclear power. It was going to be so plentiful and so cheap that they wouldn't even have to charge you for it. Talk about being on drugs. So
you know, Harvey, I just have to interrupt you with it. I remember that time. I mean, I was a kid then. I was born in 1951, and this was in the 50s, and my best friend's father went out and converted their house to electric heat because the local utility, the Consumers Power in Lansing, Michigan, was giving away free light bulbs. You know, they were like encouraging consumption. You bring in old light bulbs, they give you new ones, and they were raising the money to build a nuclear power plant. There were a couple of them that were built in Michigan during that period, and they had us convinced that we were going to have free electricity. And Terry, my best friend, his dad went out and he converted his entire house to electric heat because he knew. I mean, I remember his dad telling me, you know, you guys are sticking with oil. Well, I'm going with electricity because we're going to have free heat.
Yeah, right. And
but
course,
we bought it.
Well, at the time, there were actually books published that said people would build their homes with uranium because the homes would be self-heating. You know, they should have built them right next to the cancer wards. You know, that would just get rid of the middleman. So what Eisenhower did was, you know, he put the country onto, got off solar, put it onto nuclear power, and since then this country alone has spent about $1 trillion on nuclear power, for which we get less than 20% of our electricity, less than 10%, actually about 8% of our total energy. And it's been the most expensive technological failure in all of human history. And
yeah, now the reality is, isn't it, that the nuclear power simply couldn't exist if it had to compete with other energy sources. I heard Helen Caldicott once say that it takes 18 years for a nuclear power plant, 18 and a half years of operation for them to produce their first kilowatt of actual electricity that surpasses the energy that went into building that plant and mining the uranium and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complete disaster. I mean, it's a total...
it's a welfare program.
Well, initially it was just a commercial front for the nuclear weapons industry.
Yeah.
And it allowed the Atomic Energy Commission to expand into a new business, basically. I mean, it's a complete scam. And ironically...
So then,
Well, ironically, the year after, within months after Eisenhower made that announcement, Bell Labs came out and revealed the first prototype photovoltaic cells, which convert sunlight directly to electricity. So the the Truman Commission had actually made the recommendation for solar power before photovoltaic cells were invented. And I actually went to a conference last year in Austin, it was this summer actually, and saw that very first photovoltaic cell. And it is still generating electricity. There's apparently no theoretical limit to the longevity of a photovoltaic cell.
And sure, because it's basically a catalytic process. It's not consuming. Well, what it's consuming is coming from the sun.
That's exactly right. And so here you have a 50-year-old solar cell. The ones that went up in space, by 1957, they were shooting solar cells up in space on satellites. Those are still operating. And, so to amortize the cost of PV photovoltaics, you're now talking about maybe 100 years. You know, I mean, and when you do that, the real cost of the energy goes to nothing. That's really too cheap to meter, ultimately. So Eisenhower took us down this dead-end road. By 1957, we had a commercial reactor operating in Shippingport, Pennsylvania. And 1957, by the way, is the year the nobody in the private utility business would build nuclear plants. They were too paranoid, about a major disaster. So the Congress had to step in and pass a bill called the Price-Anderson Act, which exempts the builders of nuclear plants from liability in case of a catastrophic accident. I mean, can you imagine?
Right.
There's no other technology on Earth that requires that kind of protection. And yet, and they passed it. The idea was they passed it for 15 years, saying, well, in 15 years, the technology will be so safe that private insurers will step forward. And we won't have to have the government doing that.
And of course, 50
years later, this energy bill that they're ramming through Congress here has an extension of the liability protection for nuclear builders. So if they go ahead and do build new nuclear plants, they'll again be protected from liability in case of a major disaster.
I noticed in the bill that it's the $1.1 billion for a nuclear power plant in Idaho, was it?
Yes, that's the Idaho Nuclear Engineering Lab, and they already had an accident there that killed three guys back in the 50s. And, the nuclear power, no one in their right mind would ever even think of building a new nuclear plant except these Bush people who are not in their right mind, getting federal subsidies to pass out to their friends in the nuclear power industry to turn around and give them back the money as campaign contribution.
There you go. Yeah, it's just a giant recycling machine.
Well, it's a money laundering operation is what it is.
Right.
It's a nuclear money laundering operation.
Yeah, and we should distinguish it from the one that apparently Rush was operating. That was a little different.
Yeah, but, he was laundering his maid in that one.
Right.
I hope you had your OxyContin today, by the way.
Yeah, I said this is the talk show that is powered by Oxy Hartman. Sorry,
great.
I remember when Jimmy Carter, he was telling us, let's wear sweaters, turn down your thermostat. So we've got and he launched a whole program. I mean, people were building houses. In fact, when we moved out to Vermont, up here to Vermont about 10 years ago, there were a lot of houses on the market then. I'm sure there still are that were from the Carter era. That were built, real kind of funky designs that were like super solar, super passive solar house, because you could get a couple $1,000 tax credit back then. You could get all kinds of breaks. There were, and people aren't building those anymore because as soon as Reagan came in, he dumped that stuff. It wasn't, my recollection was that Reagan's first official act of office was to remove Jimmy Carter's solar cells from the roof of the White House.
Yeah. I mean, that's about right because, the second wave, Eisenhower's push to nuclear power kind of killed everything else off, and then we had Vietnam and all these other distractions. But by the 1970s, people turned back to energy issues. It was, of course, spurred by the OPEC oil embargo in 73, 74. And so Carter came in, and, wearing the sweater was kind of a funky image, but he did start to fund the Solar Energy Research Institute in Golden, Colorado, which is now the National Renewable Energy Lab. And, of course, that's the time we started marching against the nuclear plants and coined the phrase no nukes and started getting arrested at Seabrook and Diablo Canyon and the other atomic power plants. And then, of course, Three Mile Island happened in 1979, the meltdown of the plant. So you had a major move away from nuclear power. And, in fact, utilities stopped ordering nuclear plants and started canceling all the ones they had on order at the time. A lot of them were stopped even under construction. And we had a big fair at the University of Massachusetts in 75 with Buckminster Fuller and a lot of wind power and things like that. And so you had a revival of the old Paley Commission report and the idea that solar power and wind power could come ahead and take us off fossil fuels and end this nuclear nightmare. And that went on under Carter until, as you say, Reagan came in. Now, one thing that happened was you had Jerry Brown as governor of California then, and Brown put in a tax credit, and the 17,000 windmills were erected in California, and some of them were scams, and a lot of them didn't work, but a lot of them did work, and in fact, a lot of them are still working.
Oh, yeah, you can see this farm of them when you drive into Palm Springs. You know,
yeah, those are actually new. I mean, what happened in the 70s and early 80s, the United States had 90...
Harvey, I got to interrupt you and ask you to just hold that thought right there because we got to go to a break here. We're speaking with Harvey Wasserman. It's 20 minutes after the hour. We're speaking with Harvey Wasserman, senior editor of the Columbus Free Press, a regular contributor to CommonDreams.org, author of several books, including George W. Bush versus the Superpower of Peace. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and we will be right back.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway!
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Kathy. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The Mike Molloy Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who had more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't
he? Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Express yourself. Express yourself.
Welcome back. Exposing the con and conservative. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Harvey Wasserman, who just published a marvelous piece in Mother Jones, Partisan Power Loss. He's the senior editor of the Columbus Free Press, but this piece on the energy mess is just extraordinary. Vin in Santa Fe, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, by the way. If you have a question, if you'd like to talk to Harvey, 1-800-825-5937. And Vin in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Vin, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program with Harvey Wasserman.
Thank you, Tom. I just wanted to ask Harvey and yourself what you thought the impact would be on existing programs. For example, I was delighted to find out that my local energy provider offered electricity generated from wind. We had to pay, you know, just a slight bit more for it, but we could specify the number of kilowatt hours that we wanted to purchase from wind power. And we began doing so a couple of months ago. And now this insane bill, I'm wondering, you know, what the effect of that's going to be on these local companies that are doing some nice work.
Well, one thing real quick before I forget. I'm www.freepress.org. And people want to write me, it's harvey@freepress.org. Most of my stuff is published there before it goes to Common Dreams. One of the things I do write a lot about is the wind industry. I'm pretty deeply involved in it. And it's nice that these utilities are offering some wind power, but the reality is that it should be cheaper. And wind power is cheaper than all the other forms of new electricity. And what they did
I was kind of disappointed that we had to pay more rather than less.
Oh, it's ridiculous. I mean, really, it's a scam. It's good that they've got wind power going out there, but the reality is that you should be paying less for wind power than for coal, oil, nukes, and
but they're getting subsidies for the other ones, aren't they, Harvey? I mean,
absolutely.
Isn't it ultimately less expensive for them because of the government welfare to the coal, oil, and nuclear industries?
Right. Well, we call it King Kong, coal, oil, nuclear, and gas. And basically, these guys, and this energy bill that they're sticking through, which Tom Daschle has just caved in on, by the way, and it's very important you call
your senators. You're kidding.
No, he did. He's
gonna, my God.
He's not going to oppose it. And that's what the MotherJones.com piece is about. And people, you should call in Arizona, call both your senators and tell them everywhere to stop this bill.
Let me put out here the telephone number for the United States Senate. And you can just call this number and ask for your senator, and they'll connect you. It is area code 202-224-3121.
Yeah, callyourmoveon.org will be glad to provide you with the numbers of specific senators and reps.
Right.
Yeah. Although this switchboard will get you there in a second.
The reality is that wind power is now the cheapest form of new electricity, and despite the fact that, you know, Eisenhower and then Reagan did their very best to kill the industry, we had this little glitch in the world called Denmark, and Denmark went ahead and did what the United States should have done with wind power, and it's now wind power is a tremendously advanced industry now, and we're getting electricity from wind power, like I say, cheaper than oil, cheaper. Natural gas is about to fall off a cliff, by the way, and the prices are going to skyrocket, and even coal now, production is dropping in coal because they've gotten to the cheap. They say there's more of it than we could ever use, but getting it now is more and more expensive. I mean, they're blowing up mountains in West Virginia now to get coal. So
yeah,
plus the transportation of it is going to become more expensive.
Well, the reality is that there's sufficient wind capacity in the United States between the Mississippi and the Rockies to generate three times as much electricity as the United States uses. And there was just absolutely, you can stick a windmill almost anywhere between the Mississippi and the Rockies, and it will pay off. There's been a new wind map issued by Stanford University that used advanced satellite mapping that shows way more wind capacity than people thought there was, including in the Great Lakes and off both coasts all the way down to Florida now. So offshore wind power and wind power between the Mississippi and Rockies is where this country can go very quickly. You can build a large wind farm in 9 months.
And, that's remarkable. Harvey, if I can hold you there, we have to pay a couple more bills. We'll be right back. Vin, thanks for your call. Harvey, I'd like you to get, when we come back, you know, what is the impact of this bill going to be on Vin's power company? And then we got Greg in New Mexico on the line. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Widespread use of antibiotics in agriculture might be creating diseases that are harder to treat. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Many farm animals are on drugs, and that might pose a major health risk to people. Mark Jerome Walters is a veterinarian and the author of a new book called Six Modern Plagues. He says big agriculture has gotten hooked on antibiotics.
The vast majority of antibiotics in this country, that is pound for pound, are used not to treat sick people. They aren't used to even treat sick animals. They are put in the feed of animals that are essentially, or at least on the surface, healthy in order to prevent epidemics in these unsanitary large livestock operations. They also help the animals grow a little bit faster.
That makes livestock operations more profitable, but Walter says it makes antibiotics less effective. Disease-causing bacteria develop resistance to the drugs over time. Those tougher bacteria reproduce and contaminate meat sent to market, putting people at risk. Walter says salmonella is an example. He says there's a tough new strain that can resist 5 major antibiotics, making it very difficult to treat when people become infected.
Every time a new round of human antibiotics are introduced and then subsequently used in animals, that a few months or a couple of years later, you find new types of bacteria, salmonella food poisoning, cropping up.
Walter says we need to rethink this preventative use of antibiotics in livestock operations. He says it raises profits for farmers at the expense of public health, and he urges consumers to shop for meat from farms that don't use these drugs. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into Tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm not aware of too many things. I know what I know if you know what I mean.
back to talk radio for the rest of us. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We're brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics at smalldog.com and the Organic Wine Company at ecowine.com. We're talking with Harvey Wasserman, who's a senior editor of the Free Press, www.freepress.org. I see your column on the current issue, Bush to Veterans Drop Dead, right there on the front page. Great website. Very
well,
nice.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's good to write for a website and good to be on your radio show. We got very precious little media left to us in this country, and we got to make the most of it.
Well, you know, I'm telling you, we're taking it back. It's happening. We just picked up another station yesterday, WSDS in Ypsilanti, Michigan. We're welcome if you're listening on that station. And it's liberal talk radio, quote unquote, is growing. The internet, progressive websites on the internet are growing. People are waking up, Harvey. I think people are absolutely waking up.
Yeah, I mean, people have to understand this is the very worst administration this country has ever had. This is a qualitative leap into the depths of reaction here. No one has assaulted the Bill of Rights or the environment or the basic Constitution of the United States the way this administration has, and it's a very dangerous situation.
I know the closest thing that I can you know, the analogy is Stalin. I mean, it's absolutely, although you know that one doesn't want to overstate the situation. Certainly George Bush isn't anywhere near as bad as Stalin was, but it's just that radical a shift. I mean,
you got to put it in perspective, though. You know, we have more than 2 million people in prison in this country. Even Stalin was hard pressed to put a number of people in jail
he didn't put them in jail. He killed them.
He killed him, yeah. Well, you know, let's see what happens at Guantanamo. I mean, we cannot understate the danger to American democracy. I've written two histories of the U.S., one called Harvey Wasserman's History, which I'm about to bring back. And I'm going back to our American history now, and there is no parallel. You know, brief moments during the Civil War when Lincoln suspended habeas corpus, there was a very bad time after World War I where you had an attorney general like Ashcroft named A. Mitchell Palmer. During World War II, there were the concentration camps for the Japanese, but even then, people had access to them. There's really been no analogy in American history.
Well, and let's not forget the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798.
Yes, and right after the Revolution. Together and multiply them by a factor of 10, and that's what we have going now. These guys are really dangerous, and they're very focused.
And well funded.
Well, what they basically have done here is they've united the power of the corporations, which you've written so very very well about, with the grassroots power of the right-wing fundamentalists. And so what we have here is corporate fundamentalism, which is a new breed in American society. It really began in the late 70s, early 80s with the Moral Majority and Richard Viguerie's direct mail operation. And this is a really virulent form of right-wing reaction that we've never seen in this country. And we've got to stand up to it. The energy bill right now is another symptom of the disease. And, you know, the all-out attack on the environment comes right from the right-wing fundamentalist belief, you know, that Jesus is coming and we don't have to care about what happens to the planet. So,
although this isn't the first
for us.
This isn't the first time this synthesis has ever happened. Mussolini thought he invented it back in the 30s. He first called it corporatism, and then he renamed it fascism.
Right. Well,
anyhow, we've got Greg on the phone in New Mexico. Let's get him in here. Greg, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks for calling 1-800-TALK. Yes, you're on the air with Harvey Wasserman.
Hi, Tom.
And me.
Greg. I was listening to the local university station yesterday, and there was a report from David Cargo, who is a former governor of New Mexico, a moderate Republican, and he was going over some of the pork that was built into the energy bill. He said first when he asked Domenici, who is a Republican from New Mexico, who put this bill together with Billy Tozan, there were no hearings. They just took input from the energy companies and put together a bill, and then everyone got a chance to add their pork to it. One of the provisions is $187 million to build a Hooters restaurant in Shreveport.
Right. That includes actually a Bass Pro Store as well as the Hooters.
This is the Hooters polluter bill.
How many windmills can we put up for $187 million?
187. Yeah. actually.
It's actually $350 million. What I've got here, this is from the Center for American Progress. The energy bill includes a $350 million program to finance local development projects with tax-exempt bonds, including a Bass Pro Store and a Hooters restaurant in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Right, and you know, you mentioned Stalin earlier. I mean, Stalin would have been proud of the process of drafting and ramming this bill into the Congress. I mean, the initial meetings for this energy bill were taken by Dick Cheney in secret, and he's been fighting the courts for years now to prevent any public scrutiny of who he met with and what they said in those meetings. And now we have Domenici, the senator really from nuclear power, and Billy Towson, the representative of oil and gas, again going in secret. In some cases, they wouldn't even let Republicans in the meetings that they had to draft this bill. You're right, there have been no hearings. This is a Stalinist energy bill, right out of the old Soviet Union. And if you look at the media coverage of it, you know, they're all talking about Michael Jackson, while the Clean Air and Clean Water Act go right down the toilet.
Yeah, it's almost, you know, in our chat room yesterday, we actually had somebody who said, who suggested the conspiracy theory, and somebody else pointed out, I was on the History Channel last night, about 20 minutes of a program on the men who killed Kennedy, so I have to disqualify myself when it gets to conspiracy theory things. But in any case, the conspiracy theory that the Michael Jackson indictment was timed to release so that it would take the focus away from the demonstrations against Bush and the energy bill and Lindsey Graham's releasing his bill to gut Social Security and the Medicare bill and all this stuff. You know, it's like this full court press. But I'm not quite that paranoid. Greg,
well, you know,
they
always find something. The media always finds something to distract your attention. And if it wasn't that, it'd be Lacey Peterson or something else. The media has really gone down the toilet in this country with the corporate ownership and the buying into the Bush agenda here, which is an extreme right-wing agenda, repealing everything that's been done in this country, certainly since the New Deal, and in many cases all the way back to the Bill of Rights. I mean, we're really up against it here. These are the times to try our souls, as they say, and we have to really renew our commitments to democracy and our belief in the Bill of Rights to continue ahead here.
Yeah, as Thomas Paine said, these are the times to try men's souls. And then he went on to say, the summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will now, no doubt, shrink from the service of his country, but tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered.
Right, and, but we will do it. As
we've
soon
got some
guys
serious work to do.
They've overreached. And we just have to keep our biggest enemy is pessimism and defeatism. I mean, we've got to keep at it here and keep our faith in democracy and in ultimately in the American people and the people of the world to fight this off. We can start by fighting this energy bill and supporting your show and, you know, www.freepress.org and stuff like that. We wrote a book called George W. Bush versus the Superpower Peace, which talks about that kind of stuff. And just keep at it, you know, because these guys, sooner or later, they have given themselves plenty of rope with which to hang themselves, and we just got to make sure that when they do, our democracy, our democratic instincts are still intact.
Yes, we have to wake up people. Greg in New Mexico, if you're still on the line, did you have a question in there, or did you just want to make a statement?
Oh, no. One other comment. I think maybe the Democrats should change their symbol from a donkey to a horse, and we can scare George Bush away with that.
Yeah.
Well, I think they could change their symbol to a spine would be nice, you know. But the historical reasons behind what's happened to the Democratic Party too, and since we're talking about the Kennedy assassination around now, I just read a very important and convincing argument that says that Kennedy not only had decided to pull out of Vietnam, but had issued the order. And that had he lived, the United States would have gotten out of Vietnam. It's still a mystery to me why Lyndon Johnson was so engaged in going into Vietnam. But
I can tell you why.
Okay.
The reason why was because LBJ, and this is why the Warren Commission had to do their cover-up thing, LBJ was convinced that Castro had killed Kennedy or played some role in it. And he was scared to death that word would get out that Castro had killed Kennedy, because if that happened, then he would have a showdown with the Soviet Union that could lead to a Third World War that could lead to the end of all life on Earth. And so, number one, he went into that meeting with Earl Warren, where the photograph of him coming out with Earl Warren sobbing was where he had basically told the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, hey, you're going to have to cover something up because we can't let people know that Castro killed Kennedy, even though Castro didn't kill Kennedy, in my opinion. But, you know, LBJ at the time thought that because of Oswald's association with the Fair Play for Cuba Committee and all this other stuff. And so I actually interviewed a guy who went into, his name was Harry Enrique Ruiz Williams, who went into a meeting with LBJ and with Bobby Kennedy. Harry was one of the two leaders of the Bay of Pigs invasion and went into a meeting about a week and a half after the election, or after the assassination, rather. Went into a meeting with LBJ, and Bobby made another pitch for going after Castro because there was this operation that they were trying to run to take Castro out. Mm-hmm. And LBJ got all angry and started yelling and using all kinds of obscenities and said, I don't want to hear anything more about these, you know, blanking Cubans. And Kennedy's like, well, what are you going to do? And he says, I'm going to make my stand against communism in Vietnam. It was an obligatory thing to make a stand against communism somewhere.
Right. Well, one of the great tragedies in all of American history is what LBJ did in Vietnam. Had he not done that, he could have been another Franklin Roosevelt, and this would be a very, very different country. And that's really where the Democratic Party took its bath, because LBJ was pushing ahead with civil rights in the South and doing some great things for the Voter Rights Act, which could have helped transform the South finally after 100 years. But he couldn't do it at the same time he was squandering all our moral capital in Vietnam. And the Democratic Party was caught in a vice between, you know, alienating the Southern whites over the Civil Rights Act and alienating the Northern liberals over Vietnam. And, you know, once he was out of power and Richard Nixon came in, Nixon took over the Supreme Court, as you know, and in 1976 they overthrew the attempts at campaign finance reform, and that's how the corporations got yet another leg up on our democracy.
It was that and the Boston versus Bilotti decision in 78, where the court ruled that corporations were persons and entitled to civil rights, including the First Amendment right of free speech, and that speech was cash.
Right, as a result of that, you know, the Democratic Party became just another corporate party and couldn't compete without selling its soul to the corporations. So we wound up with two corporate parties and no people's party instead of a Democratic Party that might have stood up for us. So, but now we got to fight it through.
Maybe they'll come back. We're talking with Harvey Wasserman, the senior editor of the Columbus Free Press. Freepress.org is the website. The author of several books, including Harvey Wasserman's History of the United States and George W. Bush versus the Superpower of Peace. The author of an article in the current issue of Mother Jones magazine. And Harvey, getting back to this energy thing, just to wrap this up, we've got about 4 minutes left here. And I'm wondering what changes are being made to the electric industry that are actually going to affect the people who are listening to this program? Talk about the just and reasonable rate setting guidelines, for example, or the changes in state and local control over power line construction.
Well, the disaster in the electric power business for the last 10 years has been caused by deregulation. First, of course, in California in 96 when they allowed the utilities in California to force ratepayers to pay them back for their bad nuclear power plants, and then opened the door through deregulation to the gas companies, Enron and et al., who gouged another $60 billion out of the state. But, you know, even at that, after that lesson, the corporate guys loved it so much they want to deregulate the rest of the industry. And this bill, this energy bill, proceeds with deregulation, exactly the wrong thing to do, by revoking the Public Utilities Holding Company Act, which was passed in the 30s, to prevent utility companies from running wild, which they now will be able to do if this bill passes, even more than they have. There's also a bunch of stuff in there about the grid, which is ridiculous because the electric power grid is obsolete as a concept in this country. What we really need to do is go to decentralized energy, put photovoltaic cells on all buildings, put wind power where it's good, use biomass, crops for energy, but not ultimately ethanol and soy diesel. Corn and soy are food crops. If we're going to generate electricity and other forms of power from crops, we should use perennials that are not food, like sawgrass, Jerusalem artichoke, and, of course, hemp, which the Canadians are now doing. And this bill, of course, does nothing for that. So there is some stuff, like I say, a little bit of overseeing on the grid, which is vaguely okay, but the reality is the grid has to be transcended, and the utility companies has to be re-regulated. Deregulation is an utter disaster. I actually wrote a book about it called The Last Energy War. It's a catastrophe, and the public needs to take control of the utilities again. And, in fact, the thing that works best is public ownership of the utilities in cities, towns, and counties. If you look at what's gone on in Sacramento, California, that's the poster child for where we should go with energy, where you've got public ownership going into renewables with wind power, solar, planting of trees to cut down on air conditioning, all that good stuff. And, of course, this energy bill goes in exactly the opposite direction. So if you've got
Harvey, let's talk politics for just a second.
Sure.
What we've got, we've only got about a minute and a half here, 2 minutes left to go. And what do you think is going to happen with this energy bill? I mean, is there any possibility the Democrats will filibuster it if Daschle has caved in? I mean,
yes, there is. Actually, my nephew works for Maria Cantwell, and he's been calling, and we're trying to get there. He says it's not a done deal, that we may yet get. There are actually some Republicans in the Northeast who are livid about the MTBE exemption, and because the states are going to be stuck with billions of dollars in cleanup for this lousy chemical that's made in Billy Towson's Louisiana. So there
right,
may be
the gasoline additive.
Yes, there may be some senators from on the Republican side who will have the backbone that Daschle obviously doesn't to filibuster this bill. But this is a catastrophic bill, and there is a chance you call your senators.
Wait a minute, you're saying Republicans might filibuster?
There are actually a couple of Republicans, ironically.
Incredible.
From New Hampshire.
I got to stop you there, Harvey. I'm sorry. The music means we got 15 seconds. We've been talking with Harvey Wasserman. Harvey, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Hit me at
Harvey Wasserman.
Freepress.org.
www.freepress.org. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is incredible. People everywhere are discovering they have 24 hours to live. With one pill a day, that's 24 hours to live without frequent heartburn. Yes, it's possible with Prilosec OTC. One pill a day can relieve heartburn for 24 hours. Holy moly, you could have zero heartburn. So, folks, get out there, because without frequent heartburn, you could have 24 hours to live it up.
One pill a day, 24 hours, zero heartburn. It's possible with Prilosec OTC. Use as directed for 14 days for frequent heartburn.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take a Leave Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
Would you like to know what the future holds? Call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, may I help you?
Tell me what the future holds.
Good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. But judge for yourself. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. And we will send you a free sampler. Yes, a free sampler. 2 full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to That Comic Book Show and envisioning two fat guys in tights? Priceless.
Listen to That Comic Book Show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal Narwhal. Talk. We talk about what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network. Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bat.
Show.
Adam, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
I just find it that you guys are really cynical to believe that Cheney or Bush or any of these guys would risk troop lives to make money. You must think that these guys are really evil people.
If you go back to 1998 and read the Project for a New American Century, what they were saying basically, if we're going to continue to consume 25% of the planet's oil, then our security is at risk if we can't secure our oil supplies. So we have to secure the oil supplies by seizing control of the Middle East.
Is this what you say they said, or is this what they had stated in a policy and in a
This is what they
contract?
Said.
Why is this on CNN every night?
It was on CNN a year ago. It was on CNN in 1998. They wrote a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he attack Iraq, and that letter has been a public document ever since. And it was signed by all of these guys who are now in the administration.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Truth in Broadcasting. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. In a show of force by energy industry lobbyists, the House on a 246-180 vote passed the energy bill, which, quote, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimated was worth $31 billion to the energy industry, end quote. The bill was passed through the House, in spite of a letter from 19 consumer and environmental groups, including the National Resources Defense Council, Public Citizen, and the Union of Concerned Scientists, urging Congress to reject the bill because it would do little or nothing to increase the reliability of the electric grid or reduce the consumption of imported oil. It includes a collection of subsidies, tax breaks, and loopholes that would cost taxpayers and ratepayers billions of dollars and would threaten air, drinking water, and public lands. The bill's proponents claim that it will create jobs. But a letter reveals that an energy bill that relied on energy efficiency and renewable energy sources instead of fossil fuels would create four times as many jobs without adding to the deficit, burdening taxpayers, or poisoning our air and water. And these guys have gone right over the edge. The United States Senate telephone number. You can call, this is the switchboard, and you just ask for your senator. If you know the name of your senator, if you don't know the name of your senator, just say, hi, I'm calling from whatever state you're in, and I'd like to talk to one of my two senators. Or who are my senators? And the number is area code 202-224-3121. And the only hope for this thing is to filibuster it, because the Republicans control the Senate. They can pass it on a majority vote. But it takes a two-thirds vote to break a filibuster. Filibuster is basically where they're, you know, used to be back in the old days where they would just talk continuously. Now they just declare a filibuster, and at that point it takes a two-thirds vote to bust through. And if some senator will get the courage and enough senators will vote for it, well, it'll take a little less than two-thirds to, it'll take two-thirds to break the filibuster. And if enough senators will vote for it, maybe this thing can be stopped. Maybe. And if not, then, you know, we get to see how the cons would do it to America once again. Once again.
That's
This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison instead of right-wing think tanks in the RNC.
It's coming from a field, but this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Mr. Rogers' parenting book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Trucks packed with explosives blew up at a London-based bank and the British consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, Thursday, killing at least 25 people and wounding nearly 400. The attacks coincided with George W. Bush's trip to Britain and were blamed on Al-Qaeda. Security forces were put on the highest alert to deal with some of the worst bloodshed in Turkey since the 1970s. The bombings at the high-rise headquarters of the HSBC Bank and the British consulate occurred 5 minutes apart at about 11 o'clock local time. They followed a pair of synagogue bombings Saturday that killed 25 people. A bomb apparently hidden in a pickup truck exploded Thursday at the offices of a U.S.-allied Kurdish political party in the northern Iraq city of Kirkuk, killing 5 people and wounding 40, including children. It was the second car bombing in as many days targeting Iraqis who cooperate with the U.S.-led occupation. Mayor Abdul Rahman Mustafa said all indications point to a suicide attack because one unidentified body could be the driver. Elsewhere, a pro-U.S. politician was assassinated in the southern city of Basra, and gunmen killed an Iraqi guard at the Jordanian embassy in Baghdad. The U.S. military reported forces killed 10 Iraqis north of the capital after being attacked. House Senate bargainers shrugged off a White House veto threat Wednesday and agreed to block a Bush administration plan to let any company own television stations watched by nearly half the nation's viewers. Without a specific vote on the subject and virtually no discussion, negotiators included a provision barring the FCC from letting companies own stations watched by 45% of viewers. That means the current limit of 35% would remain in effect. Senate Appropriations Committee Chairman Ted Stevens, a supporter of retaining the current narrower ownership limits, told reporters he expected a verbal spanking from the White House, but not a veto. More news after this.
Make a fast friend. Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
A concessions worker filled used plastic cups with beer and resold them at Sunday's Tampa Bay Buccaneers game and pocketed over $1,000 in unreported sales. The worker was observed picking up used cups from tables and refilling them without rinsing them at a Bud Light booth near the south end zone of Raymond James Stadium. The food service company alerted police after noticing that more beer was being sold from the worker's booth than was being reported. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com.
This is
For more
Eric
information, visit
Shopify.
IEAmericaRadio.com.
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway.
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
Pundits and other political cynics scoff at citizens' efforts to reform America's money-corrupted political process, saying it's as futile as trying to teach table manners to a hog. The effort wears you out, and it only annoys the hog. That's cute, but if the cynics would only lift their eyes from their myopic focus on Washington, they would see something big taking place in such diverse states as Maine and Arizona. Citizens in both places have already passed grassroots initiatives providing for dramatic reform, public financing of elections. These clean election initiatives give candidates of any party the chance to finance both their primary and general election campaigns with public funds, provided they forego taking special interest money. Not only does this help get corrupt money out of the process, but it also means a regular person can run for office again, since a school teacher, taxi driver, farmer, shopkeeper, steelworker, or anyone else has access to a pool of money to make them financially competitive with the incumbents. Maine and Arizona have run two election cycles under clean money laws, and the results would warm the cockles of the coldest cynic's heart. There have been more challengers to incumbents than before, with more women, Latinos, and Native Americans running and winning. Half of the challengers using the clean money option say they would not have run without it. Because this system creates more choices, offering fresh faces and new ideas, voter turnout is ratcheting upward. And here's the big one, public financing is working. 59% of Maine's legislators and 36% of those in Arizona have now been elected without taking any tainted money. And publicly funded candidates in Arizona last year won 7 of 9 statewide offices, including the governor and attorney general. This is Jim Hightower saying, if you want clean elections, call Public Campaign, 202-293-0222.
I have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network. Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network and Richard Pearl. Apparently, it might have been this morning. I'm not sure exactly when he said this, but it's the headline on Common Dreams right now. Richard Pearl, what's his official title? Anyway, Richard, you know who Richard Pearl is. And he has admitted. He says, I think in this case, international law stood in the way of doing the right thing. He has admitted. He advises the U.S. Defense Secretary, I think he's an Assistant Secretary of Defense, isn't he?
and a key member of the Defense Policy Board, he has admitted that the United States broke international law. He said, quote, international law would have required us to leave Saddam Hussein alone. And, quote, I think in this case, international law stood in the way of doing the right thing. Fascinating. Michael Dorff, a law professor at Columbia University, says, well, I think Pearl's statement has the virtue of honesty. So we are honestly admitting now, apparently, that we broke the law. Fascinating. I'd like to get back in, and let me just stay on Iraq for just a minute. This is an interesting story in the Associated Press today. It was in our local paper. We also picked it up off the web. A former Iraqi general, this is an AP story by Scheherazade Faramarzi. A former Iraqi general who claims to be part of the insurgency against U.S. troops says the guerrilla war around this Sunni triangle city is being waged, this being Samarra, is being waged by small groups fighting on their own without direction from Saddam Hussein or others. And they say their fight is not aimed at returning Saddam to power. It's about ending the U.S.-led occupation and restoring Iraqi rule. Here's a quote from one of these guys that has been taking pot shots at our young men and women. He said, I am fighting for my country, not Saddam Hussein, to get rid of the infidels. Very few people are fighting for him. They gave up on him at the end of the war. The men said they believe the Americans are here to pillage Iraq and steal its oil. And, of course, news reports of the reality that the Bush administration, in violation of the Hague Convention, has put up for sale the 149 different industries that were owned by the state in Iraq to highest bidders, and has said you can completely expatriate the profits. You can take all the money out of the country. They're selling off the Iraqi industries for pennies on the dollar. And now there are, you know, international lawyers and people, particularly in Europe, raising questions about the legality of this. But it's apparently going ahead. And the Iraqis see this, and they see Halliburton in there, and they go, we're not sure we want that. And it's a tough one, you know, because you've got this absolutely natural nationalism. This is my country. I want my country back. Thank you very much. And you've got the political reality of that if you held a vote, you may end up with an Islamic republic rather than a democracy. And that would somewhat contradict the most recent faux news and Bush administration rationalization for seizing the oil fields of Iraq. So anyway, it's a tough one. I am so saddened, frankly, that my nation has stepped in this thing, and I hope it works out well. And it's such a tragedy. We had, you know, a young man from Vermont here die day before yesterday, and George Bush will not go to these funerals, will not talk to the families. It's a tragedy. Anyhow, let's pick the pace up a little bit here. Actually, I'd like to change topics. I got a message. You can post messages to our message board. You go to tomhartman.com, and there are three ways to be interactive with me here. One is to drop into our chat room. And, in fact, there's, you know, a bunch of folks in there right now. You just click on the chat room button. It'll take you to one of the forums on CompuServe. You click the chat button, and it drops you in. We're room number 3. It's labeled the Tom Hartman Program. And no cost. And nice little software that they've got that runs this thing. Or you can go to our message boards, which is go to tomhartman.com and click message boards, and you'll find over 30,000 messages now. Have been posted, and it's actually rational discussion. It's not people, you know, throwing food at each other, and on a variety of interesting topics. Or you can send me an email. My email is tom@tomhartman.com, and that's also posted on our website. I prefer that you post to the message board. I try to read that every day. I get so much email, and we've got a really tight spam filter that an increasingly uncomfortable number of messages are just not even making their way through the spam filter to me. So, but anyhow, I got this message from Shane and Amy. I love your show and appreciate the refreshing dialogue that occurs during the program. I have a couple comments. One question that I've been wanting to ask you to answer in more detail, however, is what you view as appropriate corporate profit. Now, this is really an important question. The reason why it's an important question is because it carries a couple of assumptions. One of those assumptions is one of the ones that the cons have been trying to convince America that liberals believe in, which is that the government should regulate how much profit a corporation makes. And let me just go through this, because I think this is interesting. Actually, I want to get into this a little more deeply, and because this has to do with Medicaid and Medicare, and should we let the market decide, and what is appropriate, and how can democracy coexist in a healthy way with the free enterprise system and capitalism, and how are they doing it in Sweden? And I got some fascinating information for you on this. But Kodak is in Georgia today, and I know he's on the road. So, and he's called in, so I want to put him on the air. Hey, Kodak, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, I tried to catch you before you moved on to this new subject.
That's fine.
But it's amazing how that we as Americans fail to learn anything from our past history. But you would think we would learn something from the present future, where everyone is saying concerning the Israeli-Palestinian conflict that, you know, their course of action is futile. You know, nothing would come of this retaliatory type of mentality. And now that is the exact same thing I hear coming from our press regarding the attacks there in Iraq.
Yeah, did you see where, I think we were talking about it yesterday or the day before, that three former directors of the Israeli, their equivalent of the CIA and FBI, kind of rolled into one. I think it's Shin Bet, have come out and said that this policy of trying to basically crush the resistance, humiliating people, destroying houses, you know, hunting people down, that policy is just creating more of the terrorism, and it's making people dig in their heels harder and harder and see the Israelis more and more as the enemy. And whereas instead, if they had gone in and said, okay, let's work together, let's get your economy going, let's get people jobs, let's get things back to normal.
Exactly.
As you say, we're pursuing the Israeli policy. We're now leveling houses in northern Iraq.
Exactly, and we denounced that same type of mentality, and now here we are doing and saying the exact same thing.
Have we denounced it?
Well, President Bush and Tony Blair was saying we are not gonna relent to these type of terrorist activities.
Yeah, but we haven't. I mean, we haven't renounced or denounced Israel's policy of smashing people's houses
and all these
kinds of things,
exactly.
Punishing families.
I mean, how could we? But we know the answer to that.
Yeah.
But in closing, I'm always very optimistic. And for the people out there who have become discouraged, I would like to give you all a bit of my story. Until these recent events, I was never politically active. Didn't have time to be concerned about the course in which our country took, because my feeling was, what difference does my vote make? What difference does it make which party is running the country? All of them seem to balance out to be about the same. But now I am registered. I am contributing money. I am speaking out. I am learning more.
Hey, good on you, Kodak.
And I am telling everyone that they must take a stand. It is that important. So that says a lot to programs like your show, my friend. And
Thank you.
It just goes to show that your message is getting out. And I think that's what the Republicans or the conservatives really should be afraid of more so than anything else.
Well, thank you, and I agree. I think the idea of political apathy is what they feed on. I mean, you know, doing this energy bill in secret and then rolling the thing out and saying, take it or leave it, guys. And,
I just,
the Medicare stuff.
I just called three people that may not have the opportunity to get the details of this energy bill, and I just called them and gave them the summary and gave them the number. So now they are calling their representatives in Congress.
That's great.
So don't despair, Americans. Do not despair. I really think that the word will get out.
Yeah, we are going to take our country back, Kodak.
Oh, yes.
We are going to do it. I mean, democracy is an archetype that is burned in our souls. It is birthed with us. It is, you know, this nation has had democratic principles, even when it hasn't always acted them out, has at least held the vision, the goal of democratic principles for so long. It is not going to go away, no matter how much these fascists try to make it go away. And thank you for your comment.
And I have I even go back to the people that I talked to, you know, at the beginning of the invasion and during when the election was stolen, and I still constantly ask them, do you still have the same beliefs? And and whatever their answer is, I tell them, well, regardless of what your beliefs are, in the end we all lose.
Unless we get out there and we get active and we take it back. Kodak, you're our hero for the day. Thank you for the call, and thank you for your comments, and thank you for sharing that, and thanks for making the calls to your three friends and giving them the phone numbers of the U.S. Senate and telling them to get active on the energy bill. That's wonderful. Jerry, North Carolina, stick around. We'll pick up your call right on the other side of this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Integrity and passion in broadcasting truth. We'll be right back.
Being tough is her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
a good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug. For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. But don't take my word for it. Call us to get a free sampler. Yes, you heard me right, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Doug. Yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Okay. I didn't hear any bumper music there. Apparently the computer croaked. Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and we are back on the R program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics and the Organic Wine Company. Kodak, you really stirred things up in the chat room. A bunch of folks here saying, Kodak does action. He does things. He doesn't just listen and complain. We need to use him as an example. I don't measure up to his standards, says one of our members. And another person said something about you are a light driving across the nation. It's great. I think it's marvelous. Jerry in North Carolina is on the line. 1-800-TALK. Yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, Jerry. You're live and on the air.
Thank you very much, Tom. I wanted to echo those sentiments from just a few minutes ago about standing on the sidelines and finally making a choice to get into it.
Yeah.
My candidate for this year is probably going to be Howard Dean, and I know he's got warts just like all the other candidates. But the thing he's put together, 2 million people contributed $100 to match George Bush, I think is the only way we're going to take back this country. And
I agree.
If I can take back part of the country for $100, I consider that a real bargain.
Yeah, it's a good investment, and while I will vote for pretty much any Democrat that ends up with the nomination, I am increasingly convinced that I've always thought very highly of Howard Dean, but I'm increasingly convinced that he has the potential to become another FDR. I mean, he really has the potential to turn this country around and put us in a positive direction in a very solid way. And I think it's got the power brokers in the corrupt wing of the Democratic Party scared to death, and it's got the Republicans scared to death, and you see everybody shooting at him, you know. It's but even setting that aside, Jerry, I think that's great that you're getting active and you're getting involved. Spread the word.
If you're still there,
yeah. I guess Jerry's gone. But, yeah, pass it along. Spread the word. So I want to get back to this this issue of what is an appropriate profit. One question that I've been wanting to ask you to answer in more detail, however, is what you view as appropriate corporate profit. And then they go on to say, this email from Shane and Amy, second, regardless of anyone's viewpoint on what constitutes fair or obscene profit, couldn't a strong case be made that the pursuit of profit has been what drives innovation? Okay, first of all, let me say that I think that there is no such thing as, in a free market, in an open market, in a competitive marketplace, there is no such thing as obscene profit. Because what will happen is, if one company is making a very, very large profit, other entrepreneurs out there will look at that and go, oh, that's interesting, I can make some bucks. And they're going to hop in, and pretty soon you're going to have competition, and that obscene profit is going to go away. It's going to become more reasonable until the marketplace really does take care of those kinds of things. The area where you get the distortions and dislocations are where there Yeah, I got it, sure. Where the system has just completely, eaten or co-opted a single function. In other words, if you have, well, Halliburton in Iraq is a great example. I mean, you know, there's no competition there. So you have the government mandating that one corporation will do something, like the delivery of gasoline. And if you saw the Doonesbury cartoon yesterday and today, it's really worth getting a newspaper just to read the Doonesbury strip. It's in today's, you know, Duke, he's got this Alamuk, you know, this little town in Iraq that he's running. And he says, "This is serious competition, honey, with control of Alamuk in the balance. Halliburton's capable of anything." See, Halliburton's moving in on him. "They've done business with terrorist states like Libya and Iran. And under Cheney, they even did business with Saddam. These people live in a world utterly without scruples." And then his assistant says, "But isn't that your comfort zone, sir?" And he said, "That doesn't mean I like to share it." And see, that's the point. In the absence of competition, then you can have the presence of obscene profits. But it requires a restraining force. There has to be, and typically that restraining force is government. And although it can also be monopoly. And so historically, our government has not participated in things that would cause a situation to occur where there is the possibility of what you would call obscene profits. And historically, our government has also said it is illegal for corporations to combine in ways that are going to just inhale the marketplace. That you just can't do that. It's illegal. It's wrong. And thus the Sherman Antitrust Act and all the laws that have followed since then and all the many, many state laws, literally.
Here. It looks like we're having some minor technical problems here at the program.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. We're having a small technical problem right now, so we're going to play a best of Tom Hartman program until we get this worked out.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
And welcome back to the vast, radical, middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. If you'd like to drop into our chat room, there's about a dozen folks in there talking about the topic that we are discussing here and our guest, John Stauber. A chat room you can reach by going to tomhartman.com, clicking on the link to the radio program, and then clicking on the link that says chat room. That will take you to the International Trade Forum on CompuServe. Click the chat button, and there's a full-service chat function there available. And if you'd like to be on the program today, if you'd like to make a comment,
Animal
or if
Talk,
you have a question,
Animalogical Super Information Highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would board you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central on the IE America Radio Network.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights? Priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We've been having a little bit of a computer glitch here. You know how technology works, and so, but anyhow, we're back and we're live and it's running. Sorry to, you know, kind of bump like that. But back to this question of what's appropriate corporate profit. Number one, let the market decide what's a, okay. So then Shane and Amy asked the question. Okay, it's equally important to ask. It's fair to ask the question, how can we improve health care and the access to health care in this nation? It is equally important to ask what the implications such actions as price controlling will have on future innovation in medicine. In other words, one of the arguments that the health care companies have been making, particularly the drug companies, is that if the government tries to regulate them in any way, that they're not going to have the money to generate the new products that are going to save our lives. They're threatening us with death if we don't go along with things their way. And it's largely a straw man argument. People think that prices on drugs are cheaper everywhere in the world than in the United States because most countries have price controls on drugs. The reality is that most countries don't have price controls on drugs. Foreign countries can't tell American companies. Well, they can, but generally they don't, or they can't effectively tell American companies, "Hey, you want to sell us penicillin, and it costs you 10 cents a tablet to make. You have to sell it to us for 8 cents." American companies will just say, "Sorry, we're not going to sell it to you." No foreign country has the authority or the power to force an American company to sell a product to them at a loss, or even a break even. So really what happens is, sometimes it's referred to as price controls incorrectly in the news media, but what happens is that instead of thousands of little pharmacies or even larger pharmacy chains negotiating with the drug companies for prices, you've got one giant entity, which is the entire government of Canada, the entire government of Great Britain, the entire government of France, going to a drug company and saying, "Listen, this year, we're going to buy 32 billion tablets of penicillin. How much are you willing to sell them to us for? What's your best price? And if your price isn't the best price, we're buying so much that we're sure that one of your competitors will turn on an assembly line to make this penicillin for us if you don't want to." And so it's basically, you know, now there is the issue of patented drugs. There are some drugs that, you know, where the company says, "Well, hey, we're the only company that can make this drug. We've got the patent on it, and we get to control the price of it, therefore." And still, foreign nations say, "Okay, we just won't buy that drug." You know, there's really very few huge innovations. Mostly what they are small, incremental things. I mean, the good example that everybody's familiar with are the drugs for ulcers and stomach acid and things like this. And, you know, for years and years and years, there was really no big, significant innovation, and suddenly they developed these proton pump inhibitors, a new class of drugs that suppress acid in the stomach in a different way, and miraculously all these old prescription drugs suddenly were now over-the-counter drugs because they had a new class of prescription drugs coming out, and those now are going generic, and so now they're tweaking them and they're fine-tuning here and there, but you know, it's not always that big a deal. But anyhow, the point is that in general, the free market is dealing with this one too. If you want to have now where the issue gets complex with regard to healthcare is that the healthcare companies, the drug companies, and the other vendors of healthcare, hospitals, doctors, even in a free market situation, even if we were to say that the government is not going to determine prices, is not that they still have a monopoly, even in the absence of a monopoly, in as much as if you start feeling chest pains and you're thinking, I better go to a hospital, you're not going to dial up five different hospitals and ask them how much their ER is going to charge you to run the test to find out if you're having a heart attack and compare prices. You're not going to do it. And you know, comparison shopping is just something we don't have the luxury of doing by and large in medicine. Even with, you know, with the possible exception of cosmetic surgery, even with non-emergency situations. And so there is still this sort of monopoly situation. And as a consequence of that, government has appropriately in the past inserted itself into this industry in a way to keep it from gouging us. And these restrictions were largely lifted during the Reagan administration and then the Clinton administration, and then the Bush administration, then the Clinton administration, and now this Bush administration. It's been this gradual erosion of the protections that we had and the limitations that were on the drug companies. And the big ones were, it used to be illegal for drug companies to advertise drugs to consumers. You know, marketing for pharmaceutical companies represents a much larger share of the money that they spend, which reflects, of course, the money that they bring in, then does research and development. They're spending more money on advertising than they are on R&D. But they tell us, hey, you know, if you don't let us have our way, we're going to stop doing R&D. Well, you know, the simple thing is just to say, hey, sorry, you can't advertise to consumers anymore. There's no reason to. You can talk to doctors. You can get your information out. But these you know, $500,000 a minute ads that you see on TV, I mean, every time you see an ad for a pharmaceutical on television, remind yourself that that ad is adding to the cost of the drugs that you're buying at the drugstore. It's just that simple. So number one is you could ban marketing, at least to consumers, and that's what we've done in the past. And is the law in many, many other countries, most of the countries. The other is you ban lobbying. See, as I said earlier, it's this dislocation, it's the participation in the marketplace of government that can cause this dislocation that can give a company a monopoly. And so by breaking the cycle, see, there's this spiral of the drug company makes a profit, and so they take some of that money and they give it to politicians, and they say to the politicians, now we want you to pass laws that are going to be favorable to us. And then the politicians pass the laws that are favorable to the drug companies, like this big Medicare thing that's coming up. This is really more of a giveaway to the insurance companies, but the principle is the same. It's also a big giveaway to the drug companies. And then they pass the law, and the drug companies are making the money, and then they take the money and they give it to the politicians. You got this vicious cycle. So break it. Just say, hey, it's against the law for you to lobby. You can't participate in the political process. Individuals can vote. But there's a long precedent in the United States. For more than half of the history of this nation, it was a crime, it was a felony for corporations to try to insert themselves into politics against the law. It should be against the law again. This is how, you know, most nations handle this stuff. So that's my answer to this question. You know, the third, in regards to medicine, if we accept a price leveling situation in the United States, how will future innovation be encouraged? Be encouraged by the profit motive. Very, very simply. And you can say, sorry, you can't do lobbying and you can't do marketing to consumers, but you can still make money. You can still make a profit. And you're going to have to compete in the real marketplace. And if somebody's just making outrageous amounts of money, then it's, you know, it dims down. You know, it brings along the competition. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Bill in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. For those who are dissatisfied with this administration, there's a protest every Friday here in Santa Fe at noon at Sirius and St. Francis. And okay, it's gathering momentum. It's pretty encouraging. So I encourage everyone to come out.
That's super. Tell me about it. How many people are showing up? What are you doing?
Oh, there's about 25 to 30, and generally it's a peace protest, but others are welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And Peace Action New Mexico is there. Veterans for Peace are there. And it's been going on for more than a year now.
That's marvelous.
Yeah.
That's marvelous. Bill, thanks for letting us know about that.
Yeah, you're welcome, and come Express yourself, people.
Okay, yeah. Show up if you live in Santa Fe or if you're in New Mexico. Show up at, Bill, if you're still on the line, what was the intersection?
Rios and St. Francis.
Okay, great. Great. Thank you very much. Thanks for the call. Sweden. Now, let me tell you about Sweden. I want to continue with this thing about, you know, how can we structure a relationship between democracy and free enterprise that actually works for we the people, that allows corporations to make a profit, that encourages innovation, that doesn't get into some kind of, you know, command economy, the, you know, government running everything. We don't want that. And yet at the same time doesn't get into this Dickensian world that the cons want us to go back to, where government plays no role and corporations make the rules and we have to dance to their tune whether we like it or not. Is there some middle ground? Well, yes, there is. And we've moved around left and right on that middle ground largely since the 30s, since the New Deal. But what is happening around in other countries in the world? There's a fascinating article in Business Ethics Magazine, Marjorie Kelly's magazine. This article by Susan Wenemer, I believe it's pronounced. And it's called Sweden, the Kindness Economy. Deep-rooted traditions protect an economy built on fairness. And this in the current issue of Business Ethics Magazine, which you can find on the Internet. I'm assuming it's businessethics.org, but if you plug business ethics into a search engine, I'm sure it'll pop right up. And I subscribe to it, so I've got the actual printed out paper here. And Susan writes, a sense of kindness permeates Swedish society. In overseas labor policies, Swedish companies refuse to adopt the lower standards globalization encourages. Can you imagine? Swedish companies, not because the law requires, but they just voluntarily say, we're not going to do business with companies that are running sweatshops. For example, the clothing retailer Lindex, it's like, you know, Macy's. I mean, it's a big retail store of clothing. Roland Eriksson, the company, the director of security for the company, for this clothing retailer Lindex, actually sends its own inspectors overseas to make sure that no child labor is used, physical facilities are safe, and work hours are not excessive. This for the products that they buy that are not made in Sweden. And he was asked the question, well, you know, aren't you worried that somebody's going to come along and compete with you and buy stuff from unethical companies who are willing to offer it cheaper? And he said, no. He said, I'm not worried about that. In fact, he says, I think media outrage and consumer intolerance would punish inhumane practices. He said, but we're not going to test it. There are some things we just wouldn't do. In other words, he thinks if one of his competitors tried to do that, that there'd be a backlash. But nobody's even going to try it. Because it's just, you know, what the conclusion that the Swedes came to is, what kind of society do we want to live in? You know, times change. We no longer ride horses. We no longer have buggies and buggy whips. We've got automobiles. Times change. Yeah, we didn't have Social Security at the founding of the United States. We didn't have Medicare at the founding of the United States. But times have changed. That doesn't mean that they're inconsistent with the visions and the ideals of the founders. It doesn't mean that they're inconsistent with democracy. If anything, it's the opposite. What we have found is that when you have a stable middle class, when you have people not terrified of their future and not afraid of getting sick, that the stability that is engendered by that produces a more stable democracy. Getting back to this article in Business Ethics, Swedish business is not about maximum profits and grab-what-you-can salaries. They say, talk to any Swede for 5 minutes and you'll hear about lagom, which means not too much, not too little, but just enough. And she says, I asked Mikael Torenval, a finance reporter for the leading business newspaper Dragens Industri, if lagom made enormous profits or salaries seem indecent. Definitely, 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 he said. The top 20 companies in Sweden, the CEOs earn an average of between $1 and $1.5 million a year. That's at the top 20. But if you look at all the companies in Sweden, and you just exclude those top 20, because their pay is non-typical, the average annual net pay for all CEOs in Switzerland is between $63,000 and $85,000 a year. The highest worker pay is between $41,000 and $46,000, and the lowest paid workers make between $15,200 and $17,700. In other words, the ratio of the highest to the lowest paid workers in Sweden is 3-1. 3-1! I mean, in America, we have companies where the ratio is 400-1, 500-1, 3-1. Now, what brings this about? It's like all of Sweden has become a giant middle class. She notes in this article, so few people are wealthy, wealthy as in the Rockefeller sense, that they don't constitute a visible social class. Now, how did this come about? The Swedes got together and they said, you know, here's how it wasn't the Swedish king imposed it or the queen. It was the Swedes themselves. They said, this is how we'd like to live. By law, CEOs and executives cannot sit on their own corporate boards. And each corporate board must include not two non-voting labor members chosen by the union. It's just very straightforward stuff. They have universal education, universal health care, universal retirement pay, and excellent public nursing homes. Very straightforward. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Integrity and passion in broadcasting truth. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Do you ever wake up with back or body pain?
Oh.
Ah. When you need relief, try Extra Strength Bare Back and Body. It soothes aching backs and sore muscles with the trusted strength of Bare Aspirin, working effectively at the site of pain. Plus, it contains a special pain relief enhancer. Nothing is proven to work better than Bare Back and Body. Not Advil, not Tylenol. Don't let back aches and body pain slow you down.
Ah.
Take Bare Back and Body and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
Baxter speaking.
Hi, sir. This is Brad Morgan. I don't think I can make it in today.
Any Theraflu around the house?
Yes, sir.
Well, terrific. Then I'll see you soon.
What?
Yeah, a hot steaming cup of Theraflu will have you feeling better in no time. Theraflu works fast. From that first sip, you'll feel an immediate soothing sensation that lets you know some mighty powerful relief's on the way. See you soon, Brad.
Theraflu. Let the day begin. Use as directed.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cassie, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Show. An email here from Jamie. Jamie has a great idea. He was listening to the program and heard the Brett Bercy segment. Our friend down in South Carolina who was arrested outside a Bush campaign speech. Jamie says, I have an idea for getting close to Bush with protest signs. Make a sign that says, impeach Bush, or something of that nature. One word above the other. And then have a strip of paper that is the same color as the sign's background. On this strip of paper, you print something like re-elect. Lightly stick re-elect over impeach. Carry this sign to the Bush event, and after you are safely surrounded by pro-Bush hordes, remove the re-elect portion of the sign and hold it up.
We love Bush. We love Bush. We love Bush.
Impeach Bush.
Huh? You didn't know I'm going to say that, did you?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
She is thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Bantila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Bantila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need is a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Marianne Williams. I hope that you'll listen to me here at IE America Radio Network every Monday through Friday afternoon. I'm talking about how we can change the world from the inside out. How do the principles that apply to us spiritually and psychologically also apply to us collectively? How we act not only as individuals, but as a nation. Join me. Let's transform ourselves, and let's transform our world. And let's do it now.
The Marianne Williamson Show, Monday through Friday from 3 p.m. till 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the bill that will help you escape the matrix. Our program today brought to you by Small Dog Electronics and the Organic Wine Company. Consider that. Here's how this happened. We're talking about Sweden. Here's how it happened. And this is such a tale, a cautionary tale, and a remarkable opportunity tale for America. Sweden was a modern liberal democracy, liberal in the context of, you know, not like liberal conservative, but, you know, a modern democracy. And the first thing they did was created public financing of political elections. They made it illegal for corporations to buy politicians. In fact, politicians can't take money from anybody except the government. So there's public financing of political campaigns. And it's very easy to qualify for it, and this doesn't marginalize anybody, and it doesn't say, no, that party can and this party can't, and it's very broad. But it's public financing. Sweden, of course, is not alone in this. There's many other countries that do this. But this is where it began. And so the politicians who were being elected, instead of, you know, having, like, you know, Billy Towson, who represents the oil industry, and Tom DeLay, who represents the polluting industries, and Pete Domenici, who represents the nuclear industry, or whatever. I mean, rather than having politicians who are bought and paid for by particular industries. They started having what used to be referred to as statesmen. I'm not sure there's a gender-neutral statesperson version of that. I've never heard it, but probably. Anyhow, they started having politicians who were actually responsive to the people. And the people, through these politicians, mandated 5 weeks of paid vacation a year. Daycare was heavily subsidized. Universal health care, universal retirement pay, and excellent nursing homes. A society that actually works. How did they do it? They got corporations out of politics. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Thanks for joining us today. Our program produced by Louise Hartman and Joe McPherson, and Steph Stryker and Shar Jones doing the engineering in Detroit. Join us.